interrupting the current neo-uranial climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 579. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Now, you likely don't need to use the airport to get you behind the woodshed, but SoundMinds have provided me a link to a document posted on Excited Odyssey's channel. You want to get over there and look at what's going on. But there was a neat little document to read through. Gave us some of the policies of the government, what's coming down, and most importantly, what, if you will, they want to call it the opt-out. Want to bring a little bit of a twist to that. Not so much so out of line, but how I think people need to look at this first. A State of Facial Recognition is the document title. Entry, Exit Points, Balancing Convenience with Privacy. So on the face of that, you don't hear anything. It's just imposed. There's no qualifiers. Just imposed. And I think that's what the main problem is with most of what we're doing anymore in the world. As far as at least Americans thinking they have rights, even those that are contrary to authority, as I've been noticing, you're contrary, but you're kind of contrary in silence regarding your actions to being actually quiet. And it's not being quiet. It's actually asserting the denial of application. And read through the document. Introduction on this. In recent years, the widespread adoption of facial recognition technology at U.S. and entry exit points under purview of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, has raised significant concerns related to privacy, security, and individual rights. This technology, while aiming to enhance border security and streamline traveler verification, poses various challenges that need to be addressed. The current state. Facial recognition technology has assumed a pivotal role in United States Customs and Border Protection, CBP, efforts to accurately monitor international travelers as they enter and exit the country. This shift from solely relying on biographic information to incorporating biometric data is driven by the imperative to identify overstays and fortify border control measures. Please listen very carefully to what these pertain to and start qualifying. Would you be any of these here in the United States as an American? That's where I'm going to end up going with this. The legislative foundation, as delineated in 8 U.S.C. Section 1365B, unequivocally mandates the development of execution of an entry-exit data system with seamlessly integrating both biographic and biometric records for foreign nationals. In summary, the TSA uses a facial recognition for identify verification, but claims not to use it for law enforcement purposes. Travelers have the option to decline facial recognition and present physical ID instead, with protections in place to ensure their rights are respected. However, concerns about data security and potential breaches remain. So let's stop there, except to read the references to this down below. When you get this document, taking special interest upon whom this relates, and it was just recognized in the article. 85 Federal Register of 74-179, collection of biometric data from aliens upon entry and to and departure from the United States. HCFR section 215.8A and 235.1F, emphasis added, requirements for biometric identifiers from aliens on departure. So I'm still not sure what the TSA's interest can be in a non-foreign national, which we know as Americans. That's what this opt-out, where there is no probable cause, they go through the opt-out process for you, that you have to do, where there's no probable cause to believe the traveler is not a national. Now, the facial recognition laws pertain to aliens and foreign nationals, not Americans. So the TSA should have a lane for American nationals to go through without further harassment than maybe presenting a document showing you live here. I guess they need to know that much. It's not like there is a lack of connection that your know your customer prison system hasn't answered before the American even got there. That they wouldn't already know this. They tell us that to know your opt-out rights, but these laws do not pertain to Americans that they have to opt out on. The law simply does not apply to require opting out. As I read this article and these statutes, nothing pertains to Americans relative to this jurisdiction and this authority. Well, unless you live in an open-air prison and don't know that. Thanks, Excited, for posting that link. I did appreciate looking that up. Periodically, I like to get some background on some of the stuff I talk about based on a lot of my past research, but it's all consistent, stays pretty good. And this one showed again, if I read correctly through, you're going to see that it doesn't pertain. And now don't go in there, you know, waving your American flag, because they're probably not going to recognize it. But the point is, that's where it's there. You would bring your law. You bring the black and white, as I tell you, and you say, where are you saying that I'm an alien? And if they say that we don't know that, say, well, then you're just presuming without proof that I am, and you don't have that right. That's at least a defamation, if not interfering with my right to travel, when I'm not an alien and I am a national. And that's an extortion, then, to interfere with my property rights to travel. Then it's also coercion, a felony coercion, for you to interfere with that right. You got a property, and I have the right. One's extortion, and one's a coercion on the right to do something with that property. So we have the words we can use, if we only have. Don't expect law and justice, though, but continue to bring the black and white with you. I mean, maybe literally in a copy. Just have it ready. But what some would also consider an aviation disaster, whether it's our TSA, and looking at our own people, can you believe this? What they did to us? 9-1-1. I want to do a brief follow-up on the Iranian presidential fatal helicopter crash that they have ruled out is sabotage, as we read here the last couple of days moving this through. Raisi's helicopter probe raises more questions, though, as it reads here. Iranian investigators have yet to establish what caused the helicopter crash that killed President Ebrahim Raisi, but have ruled out sabotage, the state broadcaster IRIB reported on Wednesday. Quote, an explosion that might have occurred as a result of sabotage during the flight or a few seconds before the collision with the slope of the hill has been ruled out, said a statement issued by the general staff. After examining the documents and records related to the presidential aircraft, no defects that could have affected the accident were found in terms of repairs and maintenance, the military added. Likewise, the weight of the helicopter at takeoff was within the permitted limit. The presidential helicopter had last communicated with the other two aircraft in a group of 69 seconds before the fatal crash and had not sent out an emergency signal, according to the report. A problem with the radios has also been ruled out as the two remaining helicopters continued to communicate while no traces of electronic warfare were detected among the remains of the presidential aircraft. The cause of the accident has not been established, according to general staff. However, the report noted that weather conditions along the route, quote, need to be investigated further, given the latest documents and the statements of pilots and passengers from the surviving helicopters. So, why I bring this up is to inquire upon the peculiar action of the Zionistas denying having anything to do with it before most of the world had even heard about this condition. So why did the Zionist regime speak in denial as the first news broke? Israel denies involvement in Iranian president's deadly copter crash was the news. I'm reading quickly through this just to show that it did. It's part of the notice to us in the world. But it raised questions in my mind. Why are you even talking about this? But Israel is not involved in the death of Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Reuters reported on Monday, citing an Israeli official. Quote, it wasn't us, the official was quoted as saying. Now, why say anything at all here? Consider the dynamic in the Middle East and what's going on. Why would you even say open your mouth? Where they will deny, not say anything ever. They came right out and said something. It was reported unofficially before the crash site was found, the Israelis were denying involvement. Why deny involvement to an event that at the time was wholly unconfirmed? So I understand right before that unofficial denial, Israeli news was reporting Iranian President Raisi's death, that they had advanced knowledge on that. So this hasn't been played into the military's view at this point, but they're ruling out the sabotage, and that's fair enough. I'm not trying to point a finger where it doesn't. I'm just interested in how people respond. Why are they even talking? Again, hours before the crash site was located, let alone found, which rescue efforts took many hours more in increasingly inclement weather, such as snow at night, these folks were responding that they didn't do anything. Oh, snow, Greta. Al Gore, did you hear that? There was snow. In the middle here, right in the middle of the Middle East. The Zionistas here hardly ever say anything, as it just occurred to me, especially on something that could be as regionally volatile as this issue. with two out of the three likely causes being craft or crew, with weather conditions always a factor, why did they say anything? They aren't necessarily condemned because they denied. Why deny? Do they need to be the center of attention always? Are the Zionistas here becoming sensitive to the fact that the world is seeing more comprehensively the Zionist murderous undue influence and treachery that they spread throughout? But I want to step back a bit further and take a look. I've offered that people need to listen for unique occurrences or the uniqueness of an event. Sometimes it's easy to find, we're told, such as something never seen before, or the new precedent, etc. And it's not just that it was a helicopter crash with notable people on board, because that does happen from time to time, actually quite a bit. But flying contraptions crash all the time, especially in bad weather, given that that's what we're flying through as an environment. But in this matter, the one helicopter in the convoy that crashed happened to be carrying some of the highest and most respected dignitaries of Iran. The helicopters would have been in the best conditions, likely with new engines, although that may be coming into call here as well, and other things that would have been top-notch. It would have been really protective of that. Just look at your own country, what happens to the high mucky mucks, the highest mucky mucks, and you'll see what we're talking about, the Air Force One and all that. And these Bell helicopters, while they're old, they're pretty dependable, and you don't hear a lot of them falling out of the sky at all. And we've heard the prior report that two other helicopters made it. That turns out to be those two helicopters that made it were Russian-made. So there's another question about that folding in. We didn't hear anything about that in the military story that came up subsequent as well. And this story came up before. And here in the nature of the world, is it that everything lined up just right to take out that helicopter and those people and not the others? Well, yes, because of its lawless treachery, the Zionists stand out. We want to think that it's sabotage. The military is saying not. But I've explained in the Kobe Bryant crash relative to the crew, the fallibility of the aircrew, and I described the flight sensations which render the crew oblivious to impending crash while flying in the fog, the flight path and impact that we were able to do on the news about that, and the audio from the security cameras that came back, backed all that up that I said, and these were all confirmed in the Kobe Bryant crash report. So likely something similar happened here. If, now this is the other question. Lots of questions on this. I told you it's going to be very difficult to pin this on Israel. And so I'm not saying this to do that. I'm just interested that they denied when they had all these other variables that could have been there. They could have been quiet all this time, but they weren't. So likely something similar happened here. Flying too low for the terrain really isn't the simplest answer, because we had reports against it and given no better evidence that it is flight error, however much experience they may have had. It would seem maturity didn't get packed for the trip if, even though they're now looking back at that weather, what really happened. It is conceivable when they said we got to climb that they merely didn't climb fast enough. And for some reason, some sensation that I told you happens when I was explaining the Kobe Bryant crash, what may happen. And I only had an experience in clear weather that had happened to me that I was instructive. Luckily, it happened to me in clear weather. And so I was able to recover. But I can just explain the sensations, and it's really deceptive. You cannot fly by the seat of your pants at all. You just cannot do it. And this can happen. Again, these early claims of denial of the Zionists aside, granted they deny wrongdoing while an agent carries out the dastardly deed of sabotage, could have been. They deny it, but they have somebody doing it. All that aside, until the sabotage is definitely proven, which now it looks like the military is going to back off, and there may be a good reason, political reason for that, but we'll got to hold this out too. There is something about this that I can't put my finger on with the available facts and at least the minimum attendant security concerns that would by far and away above private concerns and considerations being government dignitaries were in a volatile region on this. There just seems to be an oversight on this. It's a question. And because of the volatility and what might come out of this, it's very, very precarious, this whole process. Why I'm interested in it, because I'm looking, that someone's looking for any kind of a reason, just to push a cherry red button somewhere. And anyway, in the unseen world of the world, what it may be unfolding in all this, if anything, something much bigger than the interactions of mere mortals pretending a grand scheme somehow? Is this what's going on? because there is no answer, really a good answer around this, is sabotage isn't one of them, generally, as I've heard most of this. And I just wondered, going through and raising, going up, step back, look at all this, things that happen, no good reason, unprecedented in a way. The way it happened is described in a bit of an unprecedented way. How do you have eyes on a ship, a helicopter, and it just disappears in front of everybody? It's quite an interesting thing as well, especially that's part of your job, to not let that get out of your sight in a way. You can't let the president's helicopter go away from you. That's part of your job. And as we watch all this turmoil, I just wondered, if we look, is Dajjal on the move here? There's one idea is it, the evil is upon us and it's moving. And is this the startings of these evidences that will be coming to quickly alter geopolitics in order to make another force relevant in the world that we may not even see at this point? So this evidence of malevolent force creating this global turmoil and beyond what even the Zionists can control and the U.S. play their bit parts on the stage of the world, which may be entering the end of history here, stage left, as I'm looking at this very interesting condition, given the horrendous conditions going on that Israel is being allowed to in the world to do. I don't understand that. That's just not part of my psyche whatsoever that it would continue. There's now starting to be an outcry, but it's way, way too late. There's supposed to be more power, if you will, more power in the world to run this down, stop it. But they haven't. I have been saying fearlessly here, prepare yourselves. As I don't know, again, these little indications of the master evil is on us. Could be a simple accident here, but there's too many evils going on that remain undone and deftly being put on the world as we watch delinquents, essentially professional delinquents in the seats of decision. It's more complicated and more involved the decisions going on and outcomes than even these people can cause, unless they do something really, really stupid, like do the obvious, which would be something going nuclear, and they keep rattling those drums, beating on those drums. And I don't understand it all. I'm sure a lot of people don't understand it. I guess we're not that insane to figure it out, but psychopaths don't care. And so there's not real rationale we can put behind it. And even so, apparently, having nothing to do with the crash, at least from what Iran is saying publicly, or they did do it, Israeli did do it, why the immediate denial, but they did it that well, it may never be proven, or that Iran will not let on that it was actually done. And as I talked last week, there's a really integrated geopolitical mess going on over there. You just look at Iran, you have the Sunnis and the Shia, and that's a big deal all by itself. We don't hear too much about it. And so there's a lot of this going on that's inside and inside. I told you this a month ago or so, relative to the inner workings of the Middle East is so complicated. It's not so clearly straightforward. So it may be that Iran doesn't want to, well, they have their reasons why they're not going to out Israel if Israel did it. There may be an agreement about some of this as well. We don't know. We see the tit for tat going on relative to Iran and Pakistan. And so that's a game. You just watch see that going on. So there's things going on, but at any moment it could turn very, very, very serious. As we see now as well, this thing develops. We see that the immunity of Israel is gaining cracks as the Hague goes after Netanyahu. The most important aspect of this is that the ICC prosecutor going after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant is a crippling blow to Israel's most crucial political resource. It's impunity, as we have been seeing for this whole time since the 40s, actually. Israel here in Shorta is a not ordinary country, if we've been watching and have to give truth to it. In reality, expressed in a liberal centrist idiom, it is the single most condensed case of a rogue state in the world, and it has enjoyed the extraordinary ordinary privilege of impunity. As we can read around and find, John Marsheimer pointed out years ago, quote, there is simply no accountability, close quote, for Israel. It is literally a state accustomed to and dependent on getting away with murder. And this is the thing about having a duty to stop crime. It's in all of us to do that, and if we don't, it continues. And we reference the Genocide Convention, which criminalizes not only perpetrating a genocide, but also the complicity in it. In addition, we would find it imposes the obligation on every signatory of that genocide convention to prevent the genocide. Now, everyone wants to make quibblings over the genocide. But when you have a people, the Zionists, who are saying they want to clear that area of the Palestinians, they want to kill everyone, and they want to not have them come back, that, to me, is close enough. We want to do the euphemisms of just a war crime, which is supposed to be pretty bad, and genocide's the worst of them all. I don't need to worry about the definition of genocide to see that's what's going on. These are crimes that are, at this point, not seeing justice. And they're going on, and if they can be done there, they can be done around. You know, we've been watching that spread as well. Again, to the last Ukrainian, if that doesn't ring a bell as well. And who's running all that? Same sort of people. So it appears that times here, they are changing. As we read, no genocide perpetrator of accomplice should be too comfortable anymore, even in the West or among its favorites. The days of privilege and impunity are coming to a close, but one way or another. That's a rock song, isn't it? So the problem is, enforcement comes under scrutiny now, if that's the case, and when the world is shown to the lack of an enforcement backbone, we're exposing all the world's accomplices then to what? So this becomes the problem when I keep telling you about silence is consent. This is global silence on this part, and every nation and the people have an obligation to stop the evil that they're saying. See, people enjoy now, with their consent and their silence, they enjoy the evil they've allowed. As we read a story here, the criminal court, we got the ICJ, the Court of Justice, and criminal court. ICC prosecutor seeks arrest warrant of Israel's Netanyahu and Hamas leaders. The International Criminal Court of Prosecutors said on Monday he had requested arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in defense, and his defense chief and three Hamas leaders over alleged war crimes. ICC prosecutor Karim Khan said in a statement issued after more than 7 months of war in Gaza that he had reasonable grounds to believe that five men, quote, bear criminal responsibility for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. He said that he had applied for an arrest warrant for Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant as well as Netanyahu. They have overseen Israel's offensive against Hamas in Gaza since the Palestinian militant group's deadly October 7th raid on Israel. Khan also had applied for arrest warrants for Hamas chief Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed al-Masri, the commander-in-chief of the military wing of the Hamas, who is widely known as Deif, and Ismail Haniyeh, head of Hamas political bureau. And let me interject there. If he's the head of the political bureau, he's really off limits under international law. And this is one of the big major problems about just bombing everything. You're not identifying who is in a political capacity and with the Hamas group, and which is their government, the Palestinians, Gazan government, or who is in a military role. And that it can shift in a moment. And I know that's awkward, but this is what the obligation on the belligerent occupier is under international law. So, interjecting there, they're not supposed to be killing the political bureau people. The panel of pre-trial judges will determine whether the evidence supports the arrest, but the court has no means of enforcing such warrants, and its investigation into Gaza and the Gaza war has been opposed by the United States and Israel. And so here, as I talked before, the enforcement becomes a problem. So then what's the point other than more Palestinians will die here if you have no enforcement? So we're seeing the failure of these extra national governments, governances. They aren't given the teeth to do a thing. And so you've got to have an integrated society. You've got to have integrated things. This is why doing anything with the UN and giving them any enforcement power is very so dangerous, because then you give a non-government the power to do things. So the best we can hope for is that we find other people in the world that do agree that what we're seeing in Israel needs to stop. And I don't know where that goes, but this is a big deal about going after Netanyahu. This is a giant political problem. And so, in my mind, I don't really agree with the ICC. or the ICJ or any of that. But if there's going to be another voice, because no, there is no voice, like we see the Houthis, there's one voice that came out and said, we're going to defend those people from the genocide they're suffering. We have an obligation. We're the only ones that have done it. In fact, they just attacked the United States aircraft carrier. What backbone? They don't, these people in bare feet don't care. They've done it. They don't care to continue the be silent against an atrocity. And they're taking action, to their credit. Absolutely to their credit. I don't need to know what they believe, how they believe, what they're doing. There's a principle, and they're attempting to stand up for their part of it. We move into now Biden, based on what the ICC wants to do. Another witness that there may be a real, real problem, despite the enforcement problem. Biden says ICC move on arrest warrants for Israel leaders outrageous. Again, remember, even those that are complicit with a genocide are liable. And so we're just hearing here, the United States and Israel, we're just hearing the criminals complaining that the law is outrageous. Quote, and let me be clear, whatever this prosecutor might imply, there is no equivalence, none, between Israel and Hamas. We will always stand with Israel against threats to its security, Biden said in a statement. And I was replying over to Gerald Celente and asking, why does he have any opinion about an organization the U.S. chose not to participate with? However, if you listen very carefully, what he said, Biden is correct. But it wasn't even based in equivalence, but Biden's correct. There is no equivalence. Israel is an illegal belligerent occupier with no right of self-defense, and the Palestinians are victims having right of resistance. It includes Hamas in whatever military or political capacity. And that political capacity is off limits, even if Israel had a right of self-defense. And I read that document to you, the part of that document to you, those that listen behind the woodshed, to prepare you, get your mind square up about what you're reading in the notice that they're given to us. And really, this is to be able to go through that, not be persuaded by all the things you can prove in that's in foundation of law and what ought to do in principles. Those are settled. You get past that to start seeing through things like what's going on maybe underneath the skin relative to the geopolitical interactions. And where these leaders are leading us as far as nations, are they getting their people to do? It's like Putin has to get his citizens on board. He did. The United States has to get their citizens on board before they will go to war. Not so good so far, but we see that there's a lot of support for Israel committing genocide, and all those accomplices are liable here. They're culpable, I guess I should say. Anyway, moving here, Biden's top aide, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, also criticized the move, raising questions over the court's jurisdiction as well as its process of making this application. Listen very carefully what the leaders, these leaders know what they're doing. This is what we talk about all the time, isn't it? One of the first things we see, look at the jurisdiction, challenge it if you can do it. If you have to challenge it. If it looks like they have it, you challenge it. Make sure you have the right thing. But here, raising the question about jurisdiction is not denying the jurisdiction. That's the problem that I see people do, but raising the question admits the establishment and existence of the jurisdiction, but that either do not apply to you and is usually executed with a pre-plea remedy and avoidance filed into the court against the jurisdiction is how you do that. And listen very carefully how they're really kind of messing up on the world stage about this kind of stuff. What Blinken just did is admitted there was a jurisdiction. He just didn't think it applied. That's not for him to say. And actually, when we see what happened, Israel agreed, didn't it? Blinken said Israel was prepared to cooperate with the court and that the prosecutor was scheduled to visit Israel as early as next week, but instead he went on a cable television to announce the charges. So what is the question? Israel agreed about the jurisdiction of the ICC and was about to cooperate. So what is outrageous then about an ICC judge proposing the issuance of an arrest warrant against the Zionists? On the other hand, what is the problem with the judge's proposal, which issuing out or requesting the issuance of an arrest warrant against Hamas? And this is what the equivalence was trying to bring on, this idea that he was going to be even-handed. That's not the way the judge is supposed to work that. Plus, the judge is doing this, you notice. The judge prejudices the matter against Hamas by recognizing a right in Israel, the belligerent occupier, the illegal belligerent occupier, to defend itself, its people, and has no right in Hamas to resist, doesn't recognize the right in Hamas to resist. Both points are contrary. It's interpreted by the judge. Both of these points are contrary to international law, as I read it to you weeks ago. Again, I read these things. We see later in the notices in the weeks, it comes out for us to apply that standard. And we shouldn't have a question at that point. And if we do, we've got to go do a little bit more research, or we look at a fact, and we start making a quick determination. But as I read this, the code for the law for belligerent occupations, we have the answer as we read through this. Again, as I said, it's not a lot of work once you get the background. And so that's why when I talk here behind the woodshed, listening only for a couple minutes and tuning away isn't going to provide the kind of insights intended behind the woodshed. Quote, fundamentally, the decision does nothing to help and could jeopardize ongoing efforts to reach a ceasefire agreement that would keep hostages out of the and surge humanitarian assistance in, Blinken said. Fundamentally, Blinken, the Zionistas committing war crimes jeopardizes the entire Palestinian population. The violations of the original plan regarding the government of Palestine pre-1948 and the peaceful assimilation of Jewish people would preclude the need of a ceasefire, you Blinken idiot. You conspirator to genocide, war crimes if you will, if I must, because you just don't want to say the word. Murdering innocent little kids, little boys and girls, their mothers, their fathers, nobody with a gun, just for living in a place that the monarchy wanted to install a political movement in. What is outrageous is the Biden regime's unwavering support to an illegal belligerent occupier to commit war crimes, reasonably deemed genocide, wiping the Palestinians from their land for what? Gas and oil. And a new Riviera on the coast. If it doesn't come to be more absurd than that. Yeah, there is something deeply angering here. However, we just talk about it. I don't know what to do more about it. Get the word out. Stop this nonsense. Get people to start shifting more quickly at the foundation of what's supposed to happen, the principles we're supposed to live by, and start holding on to those with dear life, because if we don't, we may not have a life that's dear to even recognize once the cherry red buttons start getting pushed. But we think it's over there. We're dealing with peer militaries now that have nuclear capacity to send missiles around the world. And Biden is outraged for nothing. He's just another bank robber who just got cuffed, didn't like it. ICJ orders Israel to end Rafah offensive. The humanitarian situation in the city has deteriorated further since the Hague-based court's last ruling. The International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to halt its ongoing military operation in the Palestine city of Rafah, and it is, quote, not convinced that the Israeli military evacuation orders are doing enough to protect citizens. In fact, no, they say this is a safe zone, then they bomb the safe zone. Reading out the court's order on Friday, ICJ head Nawaz Salam said its justice was not convinced that the evacuation efforts and the related measures of the Israel firms have been undertaken or sufficient to alleviate the immense risk to civilians in Rafah. Israel must immediately hold its military offensive or any other action in the Rafah governate, Salam continued, warning that the failure to do so could bring about a wholesale destruction of life in the city. While the ICJ's ruling are legally binding, it lacks any means of enforcing them. Israel is unlikely to comply with Friday's order, and with a government spokesman telling reports on Thursday, with no power on earth will stop Israel from protecting its citizens and going after Hamas in Gaza. And even if they had a right, they can only go after half of Hamas because they're not supposed to attack the political party. But these people do not have anything that they feel they're subject to. And I hope you folks are thinking about the United States of America when we talk about people that are complicit with genocide in the administrations even the one coming in that may be voted into office. These people, we have no way to stop these people. Makes us a bit complicit here, doesn't it? Do you think I'm talking about over there all the time? No, I'm rarely talking about over there. I'm talking about us, we the people. What we miss, how we miss it, and how to maybe alter our course so we stop missing it and start to get back to something that's recognizable again. And despite here, this next report that we read, despite that it's not a Jewish state, a religious state, that aside, EU states discuss sanctions against Israel over noncompliance with ICJ ruling. Okay, a little bit of effort, it seems. But remember, enforcement is almost impossible. And we just heard the word sanctions. Let's just look back at recent history about those. EU foreign ministers have for the first time seriously discussed the possibility of imposing sanctions against Israel if the Jewish state does not comply with the ruling of the International Court of Justice to stop the military operation in the Rafah, Irish Foreign Minister Michael Martin said, quote, for the first time at an EU meeting in a real way, I've seen a significant discussion on sanctions, Martin told reporters on Monday after EU Foreign Affairs Council. Again, the impunity view is cracking here. I think it's a good thing. Again, nobody's above the law. We keep hearing that. We're not seeing that generally. And then we see the abuse of that, where maybe people that shouldn't be in court for the things that they're in. And I suggest Trump may not be, because I hear he's in for alleged crimes, charged with crimes, that actions that aren't crimes. And so that's, if you will, the weaponization. I agree with that part. Whether he did or not is irrelevant at this point. We haven't figured out where's the actual law at this point working. We don't see it. And that's what people are starting to see. And I'm glad to hear it. People are voicing the need for a sanctions-based approach if Israel does not comply with ICJ's ruling. Why are we waiting here, folks, anyway? Well, better late than never, I suppose. With sanctions, all you got, EU? How sanctions been working for y'all over there in Russia? Shows you how anemic and impotent the world has become for some reason, and I don't get it myself. The greatest democracy in the Middle East, we're told, Israeli spy chief threatened and stalked ICC prosecutor. The former chief of Israel's Mossad intelligence agency, Yossi Cohen, allegedly, quote, threatened the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court to drop a war crimes probe launched in 2021. An investigation revealed on Tuesday. Sources told the outlet that several years ago, the Mossad director Cohen attempted to threaten the former ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda in a series of secret meetings. Mossad's objective was to compromise the prosecutor or enlist her as someone who could cooperate with Israel's demands, as well as pressuring Bensouda to abandon her investigation, the article stated. According to accounts shared with the ICC officials, Cohen allegedly told the ICC prosecutor, quote, you should help us act and let us take care of you. You don't want to be getting into things that could compromise your security or that of your family. Our family will protect your family. Who have I heard that before? Sounds like La Familia has nothing on Mossad with the bribe or the bullet here. Israeli intelligence agencies conducted a covert war against the ICC for nearly a decade, aiming to derail investigations in two alleged Israeli war crimes, the outlet said. Revelations come as Bensouda's successor, Karim Khan, last week applied for the arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant based on the probe launched in 2021. Oh, it's just not since October. Very interesting here. Long-time criminals getting away with it. And how they played the game, and how it's played, and how people look the other way. It's fascinating to me how much attention this ICC gets from people that deny it has jurisdiction over or authority over them. See, nobody tells the Zionists what to do. Like, we just denied even though we had nothing to deny. We're going to deny because we have something to tell everyone, because we are the authority. We hear from no one, and we tell everyone. As we recognize Palestine, we must de-recognize Israel, South African MP says Zolani Mkhiva, has called the international sanctions against Israel citing violations of international law. Zolani Mekiva made the remarks shortly after an Israeli attack on the tent camp of Gaza city of Rafah, which the reported caused mass civilian casualties on Sunday. This is a grand-scale murder, a clear violation of international law. Let me apply this to whatever you're hearing in the world where we are going as a nation to go kill people. It's a grand-scale murder in clear violation of international laws under the cover of a Blinken saying it's not. Because he's a bank robber who don't like the bank, the law against robbing banks. Deny, deny, deny. It's referring to Israel's recent disregard for a directive from the International Court of Justice. Quote, Israel is treating itself as a country that is above the laws. So let us get back to the title. As I've pointed out in the past, those countries originally recognizing a so-called Jewish state are accomplices, and they each need to withdraw their international recognition. You stop something by going backwards and ending all the documents, if you do it legally, if you will, in law. You have to undo everything between and get rid of, and go right back to the beginning. These folks in these countries have to withdraw their international recognition. Quote, as we recognize the state of Palestine, we must at the same time de-recognize the state of Israel because those are the two sides of the same coin. But they are not the two sides of the same coin, and there is no need to recognize the state of Palestine, being the government of Palestine existed before the UK monarchy aided the illegal belligerent occupation of Palestine. So while a call for de-recognition of the so-called Jewish state, it's not a religious state, it's a political state, the de-recognition of Israel is proper, the rest of that statement is not. The Zionist Federation Movement is not the side of any of that coin, which it has as no more than a common thief now, stolen and aided and abetted by the international cohorts to allow it to exist. And so while, again, a lot of times I'll tell you I agree with this part, but a lot of this part I don't. This is one of those. De-recognize, all the countries need to de-recognize Israel. It wasn't part of the original agreement. It was a breach of that to start with. Russia was one of the first. They're all accomplices. Why you're not hearing, I've told you this before, it's why you're not hearing much of any actual motion by these countries. They've agreed to it. They really can't now fight it. The best you might get would be so-called humanitarian aid. That's still a violation because they allow the harm in the first place to have to provide that. So keep track of all these things. And to me, there's a different truth that comes out, and it's a quicker truth, and we get right to the core. And I think that's practicing that on the international stage. The international law is really interesting this way. There's lots of principles that work. But these international laws are really just norms of interaction. There is no real law, if you will. But they're principles of interaction. How the world hasn't already pushed the cherry red button, essentially, with nuclear power. There is a constraint somehow. And there is a rationale of self-preservation. Part of me doesn't want to believe, I really believe these people want to go to nuclear war. But all their actions are saying that they really want to foment something there. So I don't know what more to say about that. At the same time, they're trying to make that the future that they want. All these countries are doing all that stuff. And in that regard, going there now, revisiting a report from last week, we now see more clearly, on top of the Democrats' political motivations regarding a Biden re-election, again, and a lot of this is going on with these decisions that are made in the world by the political parties are political decisions for you at home, you voters. And you watch how they play it. And Trump does that kind of well. He watches for a problem to develop on the Democrats' position, and he'll counter it, even if it makes him sound like a madman. And I'll tell you what, he's sounding more and more like a madman because I think he's ramping up his rhetoric in order to get more and more voters. Because what's happening, the Democrats aren't really thinking that far ahead, if they think at all. They're delinquent. All these people are delinquents, ultimately. But anyway, he's moving into this next segment here. The Democrats are politically motivated regarding a Biden re-election, and who the big global money players are for the ETFs that the SEC unexpectedly just approved, as I revisit that story. SEC approves eight Ethereum ETFs, including BlackRock and Fidelity. So we're now seeing the big money players step into this, and now they're going to be given their prize, at least a mechanism. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission approved 8 spot Ethereum ETHs, a negative of 39%, ETFs in an omnibus order, confirming a last-minute scramble to get them through. The SEC approved 19 B4 forms for the ETFs for BlackRock, Fidelity, Grayscale, Bitwise, VanEck, ARK, Invesco, and Galaxy, and Franklin Templeton. Prior to this week, it had seemed that the SEC was not going to approve the Ethereum ETFs, and this was based on the lack of engagement between the SEC and issuers. However, that changed earlier this week when the SEC suddenly started talking about issuers asking the 19-4B forms to be turned around and sent back. When this happened, parts of the SEC seemed to be taken by surprise at the 180-degree turn. As I read last week, this was done all political to counter what the Biden regime was looking for in the resistance. You folks in digital currency, coin, tokens, are going to benefit from this political battle, but as I've said, be careful of where that ends up. Again, I've said a long time ago, the way they defeated the miners was not to defeat them. The military could not kill the miners off. There was a war going on between miners and the military in the United States. They ended up just making the gold law, the gold mining law, the load law. And that gave the miners the land, gave them the work, and settled them down. And they didn't have to, government didn't have to go fight them, and they got to regulate the miners then. And the miners agreed. It was fair enough. But to stop somebody, you regulate them. You bring them in. They bring the outlaw in by regulation. That's what they're doing here. Now, this led to a speculation, this change of heart here, over what caused that apparent sudden change of heart. Quote, "It is a completely unprecedented situation, which means it's entirely political," one source told the Block. It's apparently a mystery, folks, because the article is not forthcoming about the answer to that. But remember what I've said about these unprecedented and never forget things here. The government hates competition, tax avoidance, or anonymity, in particular in light of the Global Sustainable Siberian Gulag and the third-party public, private, or fascist obligations of which responsibilities you shall share in all this. And this is what we're starting to see, and we already see the big money in it. The global money is already in this, the big investors. And this is just the start of it. This is the first batch. Did you get your 19B form submitted, folks? Likely not. And at any rate, just watch how this goes down the tubes, essentially. But it's already been overtaken, and they already have a plan on how that was going to work. They likely already had it. And the resistance was a fake resistance. Not necessarily fake from the presentation to the people. It was fake relative to where the ultimate end of this goes. And the wrapping up of digital tokens, if you will, the currency that is going to the digitization and tokens for whatever they end up wanting it to do. And remember, the United States, I showed you last week, it may be the Fed is not supposed to make the CBDC. The Fed won't make the CBDC. They don't have to. And the Congress can do it, and they can do it on their terms. Now you're brought in, regulated, and controlled. Well, that regulation now, that digital regulation, is the Siberian Gulag. And relative to these things, and moving in to the all thing, and being a good little government agent, new ex-policy forces earners to verify their government ID with Israeli verification company. Ex-Twitter, is now mandating the use of a government ID-based account verification for users that earn revenue on the platform. Understand these monetary currency-related connections. Earn revenue, income, either for advertising or paid subscriptions. To implement this system, X has partnered with AU10TIX, that's gold 10 ticks, ticks, I guess, insects, parasites, and an Israeli company known for its identity verification solutions. Users who opt to receive payouts on the platform will have to undergo a verification process with the company. Opt to receive. You're consenting to all this as we move this thing along. It's simple how they do this. The initiative aims to curb impersonation, fraud, and improve user support, they say here, yet it also raises profound questions about privacy and free speech as X markets itself as a free speech platform, and the free speech and anonymity often go hand in hand. This is especially true in countries where their speech can get citizens jailed or worse. This shift towards an online digital identification verification is part of a broader trend across the political sphere where the drive for identification often conflicts with the desire of privacy and anonymous speech. By linking online identities to government-issued IDs, platforms like X may stifle expression as users become more wary of speaking freely when their real identities are known. And remember last week's discussions that were going on and going through about how they're clamping down and getting more identities to be brought up for this very reason. Although intended to enhance security, these practices risk undermining the very essence of the free speech for making users feel constantly monitored and raise fears that in the near future, all the speech on the major platforms will have to be linked to government-issued ID. While the new X change is only for those users looking to claim a cut of the advertiser's revenue that X makes for their posts, it is not yet enforced for all users. It is a large step towards normalizing of online digital identification, verification. And so we're just seeing, watch this play out. As I told you, that's all this X is. And you think that there's going to be some resistance? How many people dropped their $4, $8 a month on Elon Musk's business, his little toy, without a hesitation and gave him their bank accounts to do so? Amazing how fast that happened. Oh, because of free speech. No, it's not. Boy, look at my account. You can tell it's not free speech. But maybe not good enough yet. X is not good enough yet for Australia. Queensland Tribunal rules X can be liable for hate speech published on the platform. Social media giant X has faced a significant legal setback in Australia. The Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal has ruled that the company can be held accountable for so-called hate speech published on its platform. This landmark decision came in response to a complaint lodged by the Australian Muslim Advocacy Network in July of 2022. AMAN, Australian Muslim Advocacy Group, accused X of permitting a, quote, far-right conspiracy group, close quote, to post hateful and denigrating comments about Muslims. Consider the dynamic of what's going on, how this is all pulling together, how sweet this gets pulled together. But because of all these ambiguous liability, the government wants to know who to track down to shut up. And the latest one here, they're going across this country. I can't believe how they're even moving through, but they are. California approves digital ID rules for social media use. I was just thinking, maybe there's going to be this little island somewhere, isn't attached to any country, that just says, I'm going to be a data center. We don't have any rules. We just want your business. And they will be, you can get yourself tapped over to that little island and have all the internet you want. But now, California Senate has approved SB 976, a bill mandating age verification for social media use, sparking concerns, only concerns, over online anonymity and free speech. It's eliminated, folks, if you get a new ID. Critics argue that this legislation could pose significant threats to privacy, affecting not just Californians, but potentially all Americans. SB 976 imposes strict regulations on social media interactions for minors. It prohibits notifications during school hours and late at night without parental consent and mandates that social media feeds for minors be presented chronologically rather than algorithmically. Again, without parental approval, social media companies can implement these measures only if they have a reasonably determined that the user is not a minor, and a definition set to be clarified by the California Attorney General by 2027. More ambiguity to get you in trouble, sure sounds like to me, done by the Bar Association nonetheless, and a general, as you see that, in this war against you. Critics fear this could lead to a requirement of sensitive personal information, such as government IDs, for verification. How else are they going to do it, folks? Anyway, these are, I keep wanting to bite my tongue. The hacking that's going on, folks, is just, I can't, the hack fest. you think you're not, you think you got, you're going to be safe? No, none of this is made to be you be safe. It's going to be the public's going to be safe, the government. This information is also soon to become the next hate speech when you tell the truth that exposes the governance tyrants, camouflages government, except the disinformation governance board couldn't clearly define disinformation. This may be a little terminological hook for all of us. They don't even know. They're too stupid to figure out what they're talking about, because some of these things you really can't give a good definition to be able to make an objective delineation. So thankfully for this, a deposition given by the former head of the former Disinformation Governance Board in April 2023 to the United States House Committee on the Judiciary has revealed that the parent agency of the short-lived censorship entity, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, wasn't even sure how to define disinformation. Well, they can define hate speech, they thought. They can't, but anyway, all these terms. There's no objective notice, right? So they figured out how to get around that, and no one's really squawking on that either. But when asked by committee chairman Jim Jordan to define disinformation, she said, well, it's interesting that you bring that up, Congressman, because that's kind of, I would say, not necessarily a difference of opinion with the DHS of what constitutes disinformation, but CISA has one definition, and one of the things that occurred to me while I was at DHS is that different entities are dealing with different definitions. So that was one of the things that I had hoped to work on. Now, I've reported prior about Chinese papers, talking about the experts and things on disinformation and what the government relies on, and the government can't define disinformation even when they're holding it, when they're looking right at it. But partly because they're corrupt, and we've got to just kind of look at that as it is, kind of bypass that for the moment as we deal with that. But these Chinese papers I talked about years ago being a real problem for the government. Now, as the government relies on the science, and what the science papers here we're finding out more are garbage. Should I say naked gobbledygook, as it is read and the real problem going on here. Trust the science that just retracted 11,000 peer-reviewed papers. It's yet another reminder of why blindly trusting the science may not always be the best go-to move in the future. To remember this one, get these stories so you can prove there's nothing they can go to. Again, science is this ongoing quest for knowledge. It isn't absolute knowledge. It's an ongoing quest. It's only going to be, at best, the best we know, not the truth, necessarily. The trusting the science is not always the best move to go to. A 217-year-old Wiley Science publisher has reportedly peer-reviewed more than 11,000 papers that were determined to be fake without ever noticing. The papers were referred to as naked gobbledygook sandwiches. Australian blogger Joe Nova wrote her blog last week. Quote, it's not just a scam. It's an industry, she said, who knew academic journals were a $30 billion industry. Now, I've reported all this with the Chinese papers. According to Nova's post, professional cheating services are employing AI to craft seemingly original academic papers by shuffling around words. For instance, terms like breast cancer morphed into bosom peril, and the naive Bayes classifier turns into gullible Bayes. And similarly, one paper, an ant colony, was bizarrely rebranded as an underground creepy crawly state. The misuse of terminology extends to machine learning, where a random forest is whimsically translated to irregular backwoods or arbitrary timberland. Nova writes that, shockingly, these papers undergo peer review without any rigorous human oversight, allowing egregious AI errors, like converting local average energy to territorial normal vitality, to slip through. The publisher, Wiley, has confessed that the fraudulent activities have rendered 19 of its journals so compromised that they must be shuttered. So, as disinformation becomes hate speech, trust the science because the government never ever makes a mistake, right? Like the infallible one starts to rule the day. And again, I've talked about all this nonsense for years and years and how we have to be ahead of it and why it's important to be ahead of it so we can call it out. And then you have to do that. You have to have an objective basis. even from the science, or maybe because they call it trust the science. I guess I'll make the designation here. This is episode BTWRLM 579. Remember, you can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed. And what did we were supposedly supposed to trust the science? And now we see that they want the ID to track us down like that was all told. And we see the ramifications. Things are here in place to hunt you down, to jack you up. But the biggest governmental disinformation campaign we've ever witnessed that will never see justice, I suspect, has been very successful against us. As we read, COVID killed nearly 13 million in 2 years. And this is based on the WHO. The WHO, not the rock group, the owl, or the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization. The disease. I understand the terminology. I've been talking about this for years, literally years now. The disease was the third leading cause of mortality globally in 2020 and second leading in 2021. Keep the dates together with the actual happening here. An estimated 13 million people died during the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a new report published on Friday by the World Health Organization. The virus quickly became leading the death of a cause of death in America, as the study noted. The disease, are you catching this? Now we talk about the disease. We just mentioned the virus. I'm not going to talk and say that it's not. Well, I guess I just did. There was no virus. The disease is not the virus. The virus is not the disease. The disease was the third highest cause of mortality globally in 2020 and moved up to second place in 2021. COVID-19 was among the top five causes of death in all the regions of the world except Africa and Western Pacific. And I remind us all that Africa just didn't want those jabs either. COVID-19 initially emerged in late 2019 and developed into the largest epidemic. Listen to these words. They're telling you all about the lie right here. Largest epidemic in nearly a century. Medical journal Lancet previously suggested that the number of COVID-related deaths may have been as high as 18 million, as we all trusted the science. The science. So let us toss in this word salad here. The Lancet was found to be lying. Its suggestions are not to be trusted at all, like Wiley posting peer-reviewed articles at work. We know that flu-like symptoms don't kill anyone. Symptoms don't kill people. The symptoms called COVID killed no one. Go back and read that article with that list in your mind right now that I just said. Go back in your mind and think about what I was just saying. Despite claiming the virus quickly became the leading cause of the death in the Americas, no virus, let alone an infectious agent, was non-fraudulently demonstrated pursuant to local communicable disease law anywhere, let alone in the Americas. Now notice the term epidemic was thrown in now, not pandemic, but an epidemic is local, locally determined. It doesn't get larger than the jurisdiction within which the law operates. Epidemics don't go global. Epidemic is the step above an outbreak, which is where a health affliction begins and then is spread. The infectious cause is to be determined underneath that law by non-fraudulent demonstration. To their credit, should we look for any, they admit the deaths are not caused by, but they say they are COVID-related to the deaths. And sure, symptoms are known related, not causative. Other problems with the underlying veracity on this, the study so-called, the WHO, does not have a territorial within which it can use the word epidemic on a global scale. Your local law does. That's why the WHO had to invent the term pandemic, the meaning of which changes as the WHO finds its needs to be relevant to continue its fear campaign in brokering HERMA to the world. And relative to that private term, the WHO arbitrarily required that two arbitrarily designated regions of the earth need to be affected. The Americas, being only one region, cannot by itself trigger a pandemic designation for the purposes of the reporting on the pandemic, even for its own study. Now, I hope I'm not going too fast. I got a lot of information here, but I hope you're picking up this, and I hope you understand how quickly it is to figure this out, what they're, how they're issuing this disinformation, and how you're seeing the governments are intending that their disinformation is supposed to be true. We've seen the evidence of it, but this is going into law now. And now North America here shows no cases, if you go to their site and look, on the WHO regions map that the CDC admitted is similar to non-communicable seasonal flu, the same seasonal flu that the WHO and CDC pulled numbers from to promote the regional epidemiological relevance as these organizations cook their books to fuel the attack at warp speed. So now look, the Lancet liars, the WHO can never be relevant, even providing information, let alone making the suggestions. The fraud is further exposed by returning to the article to see it only ever references COVID-19 and the term disease. The WHO only refers to symptoms, not the communicable part. When purporting a cause, they refer to SARS-CoV-2, the CDC's patented chemical weapon, which is not properly communicable unless through an injection by some medical licensee, which, if memory serves, the WHO defines something to the effect of the transfer from one DNA unit to the next, which could be very well described the doctor injecting a patient with that chemical. That was what communicable was underneath the WHO before they started mixing up all these terms and making more of a confusion. The terms, however, in local law are communicable and disease, which are defined. They're not so wishy and washy. There are two elements to this communicable disease, communicable and disease. The communicable or transmissible part, which needs to be organic, natural, not novel, and the outward apparent effects of this or symptoms of the first part causing what's called disease. The symptoms in this case designated as COVID-19 or its little brother of the common cold called COVID are not communicable symptoms, are not transmitted as an infectious agent under communicable disease law standards. And aside for speaking here to the symptoms only, admits there is no the virus. When they're only talking about symptoms, they can't be identifying a virus, admitting further to the deception. Right here in this one article, I mean, going on and on, my mind went nuts just reading this. Okay, I didn't go nuts, but it was just so clear how these people are writing these stories to continue the fear-mongering, but they're telling you the truth, or they're showing the law. And it just depends on your frame of reference and how you frame it and how you can look into it. I can look at it three or four different ways and see all the truths come through. So that they only speak to symptoms, they're admitting there's no the virus. So symptoms may have emerged in 2019, but symptoms, COVID-19, do not cause an epidemic. Symptoms are not the cause. The WHO has never had the evidence to begin to apply its private definition, and in the referencing merely symptoms can never apply its definition derived from the global regions of lawful, local, non-fraudulently demonstrated epidemics, if the WHO were ever to be found relevant in this to have a say. The only purported cause for symptoms turns out to be the promoted novel lab-made chemical weapon, given the name SARS-CoV-2, a protein string sequence, it pretending to be and promoted being a biologically genomic or DNA source, which I guess could not meet any of the requirements for an infectious agent, correct? We just think this through, pursuant to communicable disease law. It's just not natural. Further, here evidencing the number of the WHO, the numbers that the WHO provides are fraudulent. And a reminder, we learned epidemiology doesn't mean science, it means cooking the books. And also remember, on top of all of that, there's no test in this regard for any infectious agent that they were talking about. And I'm getting all this right through this one article. If you go back through, I hope you find interest in this, to go back through and prepare yourself on how you do the quick analysis. So again, there's more point that the WHO also has no territory within which to lawfully use a test if there were or an authority or duty to use the test or determine the infectious element. They have none of, they do none of this. If you go look at your local communicable disease law. The WHO was supposed to be, and why I think it took so long, they just have to wait for the local law officials the health officials to do that. But all those local officials failed. Every one of them failed globally. This was a kind of a real shocker to watch. But they did. They failed to serve us as people all over the world. And the United States is a standout on this because of reservation to the states regarding the health matters. We talk about this pandemic treaty failing, but the point being, there's a reservation that showed us what the established organization was of the governments in the United States to point all this out, as I did, to help tamp down a little bit of the fear and get us thinking to get to the point and get the foundation we needed. Because we do have to understand when there's a true outbreak or epidemic that could be a killer, not one that they kill us with. So it would have been exceedingly more difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff, from the WHO chaff here, had it not been so established the way the United States is to be able to see it. Because if it just took control, it just came in and took control and pretends to be an authority like the CDC did, and people let them, these lawless occupiers causing death and destruction, and the people just let them do it, you see that they caused that. 13 million people by their own estimate. And it's probably way worse than that. So remember, this purported test, the PCR, what was passed off as a test, could not non-fraudulently demonstrate an infectious agent upon which the WHO could rely, for which they could actually call these numbers out today. It's not to be used in this PCR test, not to be used in the wild, in the general application, the general public. It's a lab tool to be used in a laboratory conditions for known or controlled research purposes. It's not a diagnostics tool. But after the jab started, I was explaining to you at warp speed, the PCR could identify the presence of the known novel chemical protein string used in the bioweapon, which created the flu-like symptoms. So the title of the article, 13 in COVID killed 13 million in 2 years, that common cold, again, they didn't use the 19 designation, COVID is common cold, the common cold symptoms killed 13 million people is a lie. Well, let's say, face, if you just read the title, the symptoms, again, whether they're COVID-19 or COVID, symptoms don't kill people. But second on that, there's no test to determine that symptoms kill people. In fact, likely, there is no actual way to determine what causes or kills is killing people here. Again, they say COVID has a test. No, it has their symptoms. You just have the symptoms. There's no test for them. You just have subjective symptoms. Particularly with these chemical weapons adversely affecting people on a case-by-case basis relative to any comorbidities or unknown underlying conditions, you're not going to be able to have a foundation from which to make your decision. But taking the terms used as the CDC and the WHO deceptively applied them, the title admits that the chemical weapons creating the symptoms of the common cold killed 13 million, making this, the WHO announcement, a progress report on how well the warp speed attack is going in the global pharmaceutical military industrial complex operation. By WHO accounting or cooking the books, there are their own accounting, there's 13 million less of us, your family and friends are gone, and this is likely more on this because it doesn't count the maimed hangers-on and the ongoing acceptable collateral damage in a military attack, as we listen to the military words as applied to all this. And then we hear this. U.S. government cartel paid CVS Walgreens billions to reject ivermectin prescriptions to push COVID shots. A cartel led by the United States government allegedly bribed large pharmaceutical chains like Walgreens and CVS with billions of dollars in contracts to promote COVID-19 vaccines and not fill the prescriptions for ivermectin. Dr. James Thorpe and attorney Maggie Thorpe on Monday published an article in American Out Loud News exposing the government's scheme to suppress the Nobel Prize-winning drug using some of nearly $200 billion in provider relief funds allocated to hospitals and pharmacies during the pandemic. The article highlights the controversy surrounding ivermectin, a drug that was baselessly maligned by the government, media, and medical establishment despite its demonstrated efficacy against COVID-19. So this ivermectin could reduce symptoms, couldn't it? And it did. Whether or not it got after the cause, I don't know. But it's interesting, isn't it? Interesting medicine, this ivermectin. In their article, the Thorpe quoted the Dr. Keir Corey's book, The War on Ivermectin, the medicine that saved millions and could have ended the pandemic, describing the suppression of therapeutics according to, at the height of the pandemic, quote, in the wake of the global horse dewormer propaganda campaign, that wasn't disinformation, folks. The horse dewormer propaganda campaign, hospitals started pulling ivermectin from their pharmacies, Corey wrote. Corey, a pulmonologist and co-founder of the President Emeritus of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, described hospital health systems threatening to fire employees if they prescribe the drug and pharmacies becoming, quote, even more brazen if their refusal to fill ivermectin prescriptions. Some of these same pharmaceuticals claim they are still prohibited from filling ivermectin prescriptions as a COVID-19 treatment, according to the Thorpes. The Thorpes suggested that if the public became aware of ivermectin's potential effectiveness against COVID-19, the market for the government's mRNA vaccines might have collapsed, jeopardizing the prospective profits of the medical industrial complex. But if the public had become fully aware of the efficacy of ivermectin, it would have destroyed the authorization for the mRNA bioweapon. It was also why they had to deliver that at warp speed, so before the public could be aware. We're here 4.5 years late, right? We're just hearing about it. I told you this was going to happen. And the pharmaceutical political cabal all pulled it off on us, didn't it? But you didn't mention, the authors mentioned that either, even after all these years. Which is, I'm telling you, there's a blindness in this, in us, in as a people globally, still. But don't get caught trying to get the truth of an actual COVID causation, even if you're a detective, because Ottawa detective tells hearing her probe of COVID vaccine infant deaths was duty as a police officer, as an Ottawa Police Service detective accused of discredited conduct after probing the COVID-19 vaccination status of the mother of a deceased infant, testified at her hearing that she was upholding her oath as an officer when conducting an investigation. Well, my duty as a police officer to preserve life and property, to preserve the peace, and if I see any one of those situations arising where I need to step in and preserve life, I will do something. That's what I did in good faith as a police officer. Constable Helen Cruz testified at the Ottawa Police Service building in Stittsville on May 27th. Constable Cruz, a detective with the OPS Sexual Assault and Child Abuse Unit, is accused of discredited conduct for conducting an unauthorized project between June 2020 and January 2022 by looking into the sudden deaths of 9 infants. Constable Cruz is alleged to have accessed Ottawa police files and then contacted the coroner's office to learn the COVID-19 vaccination status of the parents, and she believed there could be an association between the two. Remember, the WHO just made a report that said during that time, there was deaths going on, 13 million of you, dying like flies. During her testimony on May 27th, Constable Cruz said she has been concerned about being informed of, quote, doubling, if not tripling, of baby deaths, close quote, that happened after the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. Constable Cruz said two detectives had also told her of incidents that were, quote, fully alert and healthy babies had suddenly died suddenly, in their mother's arms. How sad. Just how sad. That concerned me. In 20 plus years of policing, I've never seen that phenomenon, Constable Cruz said. According to the report by the Journal of American Medical Association Pediatrics, mRNA from COVID-19 vaccines has been found in human breast milk. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System also contains data that shows the serious side effects and deaths of breastfed babies whose mothers recently received COVID-19 vaccines. Constable Gruce also testified that when investigating the link between COVID-19 vaccines and the infant deaths, she was standing by Peel's principle, a set of ethical guidelines for policing by Sir Robert Peel back in 1829. The fifth principle, which Constable Gruce cited, states that the police must seek and preserve public favor not by catering to public opinion, but constantly demonstrating absolute impartial service to the law. Might I add here, 1829 is before the 1850s that Britain played around with bringing this killer vaccine technology, so-called, into the world. So these principles have been around longer than that. Constable Cruz said that COVID-19 vaccine mandates are coming into force and causing division within OPS. She felt it was important to investigate infant deaths in an impartial manner and not pander to public opinion. Might I add, if they were sudden deaths that were not attributed to COVID, the WHO didn't count them. How's that? As I said, they didn't get everything. But lucky these psychopaths pushed it a bit too far, as I was reading this story thinking that. Pandemic treaty falters as nations reject sweeping powers for health watchdog, from the health watchdog. Here, the thing I want to say, be careful, it's not over yet, folks. We'll read this. They didn't get that. They didn't get it, but as I told Gary Long, they got it three quarters of the way down the field on the first try. So we're still not watching. But opponents of the proposed international pandemic treaty could breathe a sigh of relief this week, and I'll say just this week, after the World Health Organization coordinated push for the pact failed to reach the required consensus. Listen very carefully to what's going on here in these words. Among the WHO member states ahead of Monday's World Health Assembly in Geneva. So consensus does not mean right or lawful, but does eliminate opposition to usurpation, legitimizing this WHO occupant, the UN occupant. Understand the dynamic in using the word consensus. The consensus science. It's not science. It's just a bunch of people that you've got on your side. They're not going to ever argue against you. And that's why they want a bulk of everybody, the consensus from people. And they want to make that authoritative, and it's nothing. Quote, we are not where we hoped we would be when we started this process, WHO negotiating board co-chair Roland Dries said on Friday. World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus on Monday expressed the confidence that a deal of global pandemic accord could still be reached. A deal? This is just a business deal? What kind of cards are these sharks dealing with, folks? Quote, the world still needs a pandemic treaty. Many of the challenges that caused a serious impact during COVID-19 still exist. WHO Chief Tedros Ghebreyesus said Friday, insisting that the setback was not a failure. Listen very carefully to their intent here. The challenges to them are, when they said challenges, the challenges to them are the resistance, those that spoke out to stop this tyranny. And it was not a failure because they saw like 80% of the people and 100% of the governments fail in the great COVID swindle. They certainly here aren't going to be deterred. But worse, this isn't self-promotion because the world does not need a pandemic treaty. The world does not need the WHO. All the WHO, all the world needs is for the WHO to shut up and sit down while local public health officials faithfully comply with their local communicable disease law, which contained everything required to deal with the communicable disease, a real one. Even due process protections for those suspected principles of contagion, folks, as I was telling you. We don't need the WHO and the CDC, none of those folks. You needed dedicated local public health officials, dedicated and faithful to the law. And I hope people begin to get this. Why? I think it's so important to keep repeating it. I'm summarizing now what I did for 4 years on all these last few tabs. People have to understand what they're hearing in these news and notices to understand what they're actually being told. They're telling them the truth. They're also being told how they got done. And I'm suggesting to read all that shows you the deception that you can avoid. And I've explained how that was done. Had the people gotten this whole point, had that happened, had law prevailed in the first instance, there would never have been a legitimate case of a non-fraudulently demonstrated infectious agent in a principle of contagion for the WHO to use as data to make any determinations, make any suggestions, or play any part in this. Quote, we will try everything, believing that anything is possible, and make this happen because the world still needs a pandemic treaty, he said. Listen to the intent. They will try anything and everything, even subverting your way of life. They're looking for power, and it's non-governmental power. They want to negotiate. They want to have governments agree, consent by the representatives of the governed to establish a fraudulent health designations and treaty power to control you over your local protections. Why I'm talking about this? Everyone says, oh, we're being subverted. Yeah, because you're not inserting your own law to protect you. I'm not saying that's a silver bullet. We're watching the judiciary fail its trust obligation to the people. So, don't think that I'm getting a spare silver bullet. I'm telling you what you're going to have to find the foundation of black and white so they don't call you some lunatic, extremist, heretic, and you can go after your own protections, if nothing else. Other countries we read, including India, Brazil, Russia, as well as the United States, expressed opposition to a legally binding treaty with the Republican governments of the U.S. lobbying strongly against it, saying that they didn't want to give the WHO overarching powers if any another pandemic hit. Going to interject. See, the senators are stupid here. They don't even understand their own establishment they're holding on to. That can't happen in the United States. The state authority is reserved for health matters. There cannot be an overarching. If they think there is, they're going to consensus into, and no one will have the objection, and the Bar Association is already going to promote sustainable development of which this is attached, is not going to say otherwise. And we already have that test. Thank you, David Tulis, for pushing that ball as far as you could in Tennessee. They're right in the Bar Association is subverted right at the Supreme Court in their own rule. If adopted, these agreements would seek to elevate the WHO from an advisory body to a global authority in public health. A letter sent by President Biden to President Biden this week by 24 governors from Republican states said, quote, under the proposed amendments and treaty, the WHO's director general would supposedly gain a unilateral power to declare a public health emergency of international concern in a member nations extending beyond pandemics to include a range of perceived emergencies. And this also gets into other aspects of sustainable development. The precautionary principle steps up for them, not you. Relative to perceived emergencies, and this is also in itself a violation of local disease law everywhere. Don't read, any of you, read your own local law. Why is it? Because those of you who have read yours know local communicable disease law requires a non-fraudulent demonstration of an infectious agent carried by an infectious principal, and the perceived emergencies do not meet that law. Notwithstanding, under a perceived emergency made for only, well, who knows, WHO knows, the actual nefarious intention, there's no due process protection to a suspected infectious principle, only required in local communicable disease law, is it, and everywhere you get protections. Not over there, but right where you are. Every communicable disease law around the world, which would have been pushed faithfully, would have stopped in its tracks, I guess the needle tracks, the great Comey swindle, would have stopped the great Comey swindle in its needle tracks. What need is there for a treaty then? Has not been asked. It certainly escapes these senators. What need is there for the treaty? I wouldn't even have a possibility to know. And no one's stepping up. It should be a question that an organization extended the power to act upon a wild imagination or AI hallucination or other corrupt designs such as a fear-based pharma brokering and a future control will repeat this great COVID swindle. They'll name it as anything else they want to or need to, and people are going to follow it because they're not going back to their base law. But we've already lived through the effects of the intended pandemic treaty, where local health authorities stood down on their duties and obligations, leaving it to foreign non-governmental agencies, the CDC and the WHO, to direct upon a false narrative, the delivery of the bioweapon attack at warp speed, which Trump was more than willing to initiate, and Biden concurring. How'd that work for you all? Quote, additionally, concerns arise regarding the establishment of global surveillance infrastructure requirements for member states to censor speech related to public health, potentially facilitating the proliferation of biological weapons, the letter added. Quote, we are committed to resisting any attempts to transfer authority to the WHO, WHO, over public policy affecting our citizens of any efforts by the WHO to assert such authority over them. media fact-checkers assured that even a legally binding WHO pandemic treaty would not grant the international body control over U.S. policy during a pandemic, and that that treaty would be limited, quote, broad recommendations related to international cooperation on pandemic preparedness, preparation, and response. But in their feverish paranoia of pandemic pretense, notice these criminals will not stop. They say we will try everything, believing that anything is possible, and make this happen because the world still needs a pandemic treaty, and none of your local officials stopped it. The world does not need this pandemic treaty. Only those of the world need a pandemic treaty to transform your life or by your death to the future that they want. You hear the SMART method at work with this setback. Sustainability being a binding goal S. They've monitored the situation M. Now, with the setback, it's time for assessment A. Then resilience R, moving forward, getting done what they need to be doing, and to transform the transformation T to the future that they intend. You hear that right in this article with their statement. If all of this is only to allow the WHO to provide, quote, a broad recommendation related to international cooperation on pandemic preparedness, preparation, and response, it can do that without a treaty or a convention or the power to penalize an affront to any sovereignty, which that would be, such as your power to challenge wrongful authority, is what they also want to subvert. It can produce, the WHO could produce trusted data products and suggestions that are irrespective of any authority, if they were trusted, actually. But the great COVID swindle exposed the WHO in a non-governmental UN instrumentality, and the CDC, the U.S. National Advisory Agency, cannot be trusted. The WHO should be disbanded for the corrupt intent it evidences, not let it continue to exist to ply the method of usurpation to non-governmental global governance. These senators are missing the whole point on this, too. These types here need to be arrested, not allowed to try it again. These are national security threats, ultimately threatening the people perpetually, as well as wasting the representatives' time that should these senators as well, that should be spent on more important matters. Oh, okay. So these times of the compromise and corrupt, I know. Don't laugh. But hear my point here. Nevertheless, this is something that we really have to get understood. This is not just, this happened to be a clean, easy one when we missed it. There's others that are out there that they're much more convoluted. And as we honor those vets serving the country, this is how the government treats them in the news, same day, same week. This national interest is not by and for the interest of health or welfare of the people. You notice the theme going on, they don't care about you. They don't care about your health. And they will claim to own information to say what they say, which is lies, is the truth, and then call what you do to try and protect yourself disinformation. U.S. veterans sickened by radiation at Area 52 denied health benefits. I wonder if there was actually alien craft radiation at this area. Hundreds of veterans of the United States Armed Forces have been sickened after being stationed at a top secret base in the Nevada desert, but the confidential nature of the work there has prevented them from receiving benefits for their health conditions. U.S. media documented the story of one of such service member who worked at an installation sometimes called Area 52. Quote, "It scarred my lungs," said Mark Eli, a 63-year-old retired Air Force technician. Quote, "I got cysts on my liver. It started having lipomas, tumors inside my body. I've had to have removed. The lining of my bladder was shed. For years, the United States conducted extensive nuclear testing near the secret base. In 1975, federal report acknowledged the toxic radioactive dust scattered throughout the area posed a risk to people stationed nearby, but government analysts concluded nuclear testing should continue. Quote, "Discontinuing the work done at the range would be against the national interest," concluded the assessment, close quote. Quote, "The range could, in principle, be decommissioned, but the cost would be great. Shutting down the range and moving its operations elsewhere would also be of immense impact on the economy of the Tonopah area. Quote, the environmental costs inherent in the work are small and reasonable for the benefits received. Some $25.7 billion in health benefits have been allocated for employees of the United States Department of Energy and other federal agencies who were stationed in the area. But the work of Eli and other military veterans is excluded from service records, meaning they cannot prove they were present at Area 52. Quote, makes me incredibly mad, and it hurts me too, because they're supposed to have my back, said Eli. Quote, I had theirs, and I want them to have mine. Close quote. A travesty in this country. It's not just limited there or to the people of Australia. Australian waste company producing recycled soil broke rules of contamination. According to a report published on Monday, some of the best-known waste companies in New South Wales, Australia, have broken safety rules, causing potentially contaminated soil to be supplied to public yards, schools, and childcare centers. Not just the vets they disrespect, it's the people, too, and it doesn't really matter what country you go to. Don't think this only happens there. Municipalities dump free contaminated water treatment plant sludge on fields as fertilizer, they said. And they've been doing this for years and years, to the future chagrin of a property owners or organic farmers that come later. Quote, each year facilities here in NSW produce about 700,000 tons of fill made from recovered fines. They were required under resource recovery regulations to test their products for hazardous contaminants such as lead, the report writes, adding that if the facility passes legislated thresholds, they must dispose of the product and report that result to the EPA. However, the EPA investigation in 2013 and another in 2019 found widespread breaches of routing samples and testing requirements. Some of the investigations also found that the companies would retest their samples until they received a result that was compliant. The recycled soil comes from residues found in trash skips at construction and demolition sites. Recycling facilities then process the waste and rebrand it as recycled turf, underlay, budget fill, crusher dust, or recycled road base, according to the London-based newspaper. The fill is also sold directly to consumers who use it for their home landscaping. The news first published their findings on Sunday and claimed to have found asbestos in the sample of recycled soil more than a decade after the contamination was first suspected by the state's EPA agency. Timeliness here again. Delay is injustice, folks. All I can tell you. Equity. At least it isn't contaminated with radioactive particles, though. Yet. Keep poking that bear, Five Eyes. Keep doing it. But the British military must have the same policy looking out for its soldiers, as we can read here. Ex-RAF copter pilots sue UK Defense Ministry for exposure to cancer-causing agent. And I'm reading that these are just the stories. I've got friends who have been exposed, didn't know it. They've got all kinds of problems. They're denied care. Clearly have problems, and they're still denied care by the Veterans Administration. Almost 40 former UK Royal Air Force pilots and aircrew have developed cancer as a result of toxic exhaust fumes from military helicopters are taking legal action against the Ministry of Defense. The government has been aware of the fumes-related risks since 1999. Party hard. But did nothing about it, according to testimony from sick personnel and their family members. Those affected reportedly included personnel of all ranks, from those in the highest positions in the armed forces to leading aircrew and sergeants. Jonathan Dingle, a leading barrister of Normanton Chambers, who is working on the cases, told the Times that an engine jet efflux gases, which contain benzene carcinogens that, quote, were apparently being sucked through the cabin and out again through the cockpits, mixing as the air which everyone on board the aircraft was breathing. The pilots, however, were not provided the masks or filters or purified air of any form of filtration system. They were not warned about the whole system, Dingle said. The MOD spokeswoman has meanwhile reacted by stating that the ministry, quote, huge, hugely values its service members and veterans and owes a debt of gratitude to all those who serve, often with great personal sacrifice. Well, that's a license for them to kill you. According to the spokeswoman, those who, quote, believe they have suffered ill health due to service from April 6, 2005, have the existing and longstanding right to apply for no-fault compensation under the Armed Forces Compensation Act. So why didn't they know that? Is the other problem. I found that happening, too. You as a veteran are not told you may have avenues for compensation. But this one is actually the truth of what they should do. Why the barrister's still taking this on is a big question. But does compensation here mean bringing back the dead, Your Majesty? See, this is all reduced to a commercial endeavor, which your satanic rulers think their fiat monetary system can compensate. And this is a global condition. And that only exists in compensation if you can successfully sue it. The rest of you all here somewhere are not safe and will pay extra. And remember, as I read this, safer is not safe, and cleaner is not clean, and reduce is not eliminate. And public means the government, not the people. Safer, cleaner water to come at the cost from many Americans. The director of water systems in South Florida notes that while these regulations will have a positive effect on the health of the public, the cost of the manufactured PFAS use will have to come out of the wallets of the public instead of that of the companies. According to a recent report, Americans could be spending more of their hard-earned cash just to get access to clean water, implying it's not now, folks. In early April, the U.S. President Joe Biden administration announced a national drinking water standard that imposes limits on forever chemicals in public water systems. Water systems are now warning residents from South Florida through upstate New York that they may see massive rate hikes for technology that will be used to filter out forever chemicals, including polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, from their water sources. Ellen Garcia, the director of water of the Wastewater Service in South Florida, said the average monthly bill in the county is $26, but warned that the amount could potentially triple when the county turns to filtering out PFAS. Garcia points out that while the benefit of the new regulation will have a positive effect on people's lives, it is as though the public is paying the price of private companies for their PFA use. Pay now and pay later for you folks. The EPA adds the exposure to PFAS has been linked to harmful health effects in humans and animals, exciting scientific studies. In April, the EPA said the imposing limits on forever chemicals will protect the public from those dangerous chemicals which have been linked to various cancers and other diseases. Let's go back. The EPA said that imposing limits on forever chemicals, not on the companies, on your public municipalities. Here, public means government. So how does this protect the public from these dangerous chemicals? The government and its municipalities are protected once it regulates its acts and as a limited liability protection for harm against the companies or government if it is wrong, and only then when a particular municipality exceeds the maximum allowable sufficiently long for you to see justice. Then the burden is on you if you can identify a path of remedy for harm to prove the causation and liability, thereby protecting the commerce, the GDP ultimately, similar to legislating immunity to the pharma system industry for vaccines. Even when they didn't make vaccines, that is probably the biggest reason to deny whatever is purported to be a vaccine in the future anyway. The lack of remedy for the harm on top of it, as we found, that they gave immunities to. This legislation acts the same way to limit liability to the municipalities. And it's, again, cleaner and safer, but not clean and safe. And because the law provides an alternative, must be found and decided by you under doctor's supervision, not dictates of a doctor, works the same way. they'll then say, well, you could choose not to until you figured it out. Like we had the opportunity in the vaccines relative to the COVID shot. But why threaten the population? It seems like there is an additional step that the companies can do. Why are they threatening your pocketbook? Why do they can do it as a perpetual thing when the EPA should be working on the other side? Read the news regulations give utilities a few years to test their water to determine if their levels of chemicals are above federal thresholds before installing new filtration systems. That means that the number of areas affected by mandate could increase. So I read that, I go, so if there's a filtration system, why aren't the companies required to filter before these dangerous effluents are released? Why wasn't this done when this was first found out? Not like Australia EPA 10, 15 years later. Start it working immediately if they really cared about you. This shows the government doesn't care about you and wants to poison you and your land forever. So the EPA is one of the pillars of sustainable development, using the environmental canard to poison y'all. And it now takes steps late and that cost the taxpayer more. In this part of the model of extortion that I identified long ago before our lawsuit, Jamie lawsuit, is leverage funding. And these schemes do this to the taxpayers. It costs you more money to obtain the basic necessities on top of that. They attack you on your necessities, which nevertheless is only as safer and cleaner, as I said, not safe and clean, much like we heard in the great Comey swindle, safe and effective for government and its pharma henchmen. Or remaining silent as to the nuclear contamination, as we notice not going on here. So I find these interesting. There's natural radiation. We never hear about that. And then we hear about maybe the lunatics want to press the cherry red button, making this little nuclear story the report relevant. Remembering that NATO means the U.S. Minsk forced to suspend CFE treaty to ensure national security. You say, oh, it's over there. What are we talking about? Folks, this is how the whole thing starts to degrade. You realize that the environment is just in a cover for deception to poison people. And these governmental agencies don't really care to keep the poison out. They want to make more poisons. The decision of Belarus to suspend the treaty on conventional armed forces in Europe is a forced response to steps aimed at ensuring the country's national security. The Belarusian foreign minister said on Tuesday, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko signed a bill to suspend the CFE treaty in law. Quote, the decision of the NATO member states to suspend the CFE treaty left us no choice. The suspension of the CFE treaty by Belarus is a forced response to aimed at ensuring the country's national security against the backdrop of the destruction of the existing conventional arms control regime in Europe and the continuing escalation of military political tensions in the region, the minister said. Unsaid, the nuclear threat, they are having to not be able to sign a treaty that constrains them to a conventional war. While the NATO is rattling their nuclear weapons. Countries that believe they will, it's great and profitable to poison your land for nuclear national interest. And the U.S. wants to spread ash from sea to shiny sea. As we hear, it's all around. This is more prevalent and more every day going on. How the U.S. is flirting with the idea of limited nuclear conflict with Russia and China. Washington is considering the deployment of nuclear armed cruise missiles on Virginia class attack submarines to deter China and Russia, according to the Asian Times. A heated debate initiative was passed within the framework of the National Defense Authorization Act for the fiscal year 2024 under the pretext of Russia's special military operation, China's alleged plans to invade Taiwan. Again, Taiwan is China. They don't have to invade it. They're just trying to oust the Americans out of their land. Anyway, it became law in December 2023 with instructions to achieve operational capability of the SLCM-N by 2034. U.S. lawmakers have recently focused on how to modify Virginia class attack submarines to install nuclear armed sea launch cruise missiles. Last week, they summoned Vice Admiral Johnny Wolf to discuss the complexities and uncertainties concerning arming attack submarines with SLCM-N. So let me get this straight as I read that. Congress enacted a law signed by Biden to allow arming of submarines with these particular nuclear cruise missiles before discussing the complexities and uncertainties concerning arming attack submarines against China or Russia or nuclear-capable North Korea. Because as this article points out, quote, you can read, that the deployment of SLCMs on attack subs and surface ships would create an atmosphere of ambiguity. Russia and China wouldn't be sure if the vessels are nuclear armed or not, thus complicating decision making and creating additional deterrence. We want to rethink this? Ambiguity as a deterrence? To a surprise existential threat? Really? Like Russia or China can't figure it out? Even presume the origin where a terrestrial decision making centers pushing that cherry red button to tell the nuclear ship to the submarine to send the nuclear device out couldn't be figured out to respond to the decision makers? China and Russia have no capability to reach that? And we think the people think that these congressional psychopaths represent we the people? It's a very good thing, contrary to the first strike policy of the United States, that Russia and China have no first strike policy yet, because it is just a policy. And I urge you to get this link, read the report, identify the failed logic of the military-industrial complex promoting largesse for American jobs, no less, without a well-thought-out plan, and then plan for a more nuclear fallout to condemn those future generations at home the United States claims to be so concerned about at your expense and lives today. And if something strikes you to act to stop this nuclear psychopathy, do so quickly and persistently to avoid a defensive nuclear strike at home. Even the concept of a limited nuclear option is absurd. All ambiguity aside, because it's less ambiguous that the United States won't push that limited nuclear cherry red button option, as Russia is unambiguously warning. Russia has repeatedly warned the U.S. against lowering the nuclear threshold and hypothesizing on possibility of a limited nuclear exchange. According to Moscow, the, quote, limited, close quote, use of nuclear weapons by no means reduces the risk of an all-out nuclear war, but rather invites it. So I guess we can sue the government for our future radiation damage, right? It's these psychopaths. Ambiguity is not peace. And we better get that as a people really quickly. And if you think the 34-count convicted felon about to appeal Trump is more circumspect and less the psychopath or nuclear juvenile delinquent, we read, Trump tells donors he'd bomb Moscow and Beijing. The ex-president detailed how he would have responded while in office to Russia conflict with Ukraine. Former U.S. president and current Republican candidate Donald Trump has told campaign donors that he would have bombed Moscow and Beijing if they attacked Ukraine and Taiwan, respectively, on his watch. An earlier Washington Post report suggested that Trump hope to end the conflict by pressuring Ukraine to agree to recognize at least some of the territorial losses of Russia in fall of 2022 for former Ukraine regions voted to join Russia following the footsteps of Crimea, which did so in 2014, because we started something in Madon and Odessa as the United States. Trump campaign, however, has dismissed the report as fake news. So if this is news, this is fake news, is Trump saying he'd bomb Moscow or Beijing, do you feel peaceful with this ambiguity? Is it an ambiguity if Trump called it fake news? that he wouldn't be have settled the UK conflict by territorial concession, implying fighting to the last Ukrainian to poke the bear into nuclear confrontation is preferable? That kind of ambiguity again? Are we listening to what these people do? What they're saying? All for what? Votes. I hope there's a. I went fast and I missed a whole lot this week, but that there's more to follow up on. I'm showing you things that we really, as a people everywhere, have to start thinking. Some of these leaders are unhinged. And it's all for effect. It's like a show. It is the theater. And I don't think that that represents people generally. And it certainly is not representing a principled stance. It's something that I believe law, you're not following law, you're not able to follow peace. Ambiguity cannot be a deterrent, especially with the people that are feeling an existential threat from your existence, as Russia and China are now with the United States, as the United States has already shown stupidity by weaponizing its dollar dominance. Anyway, big deals here going on. Consider these things. Get the articles. Read them. Start putting some of this together. Start looking out. Positioning yourself a lot better. Maybe even helping on some of these areas to educate, like the senators, more about what their laws are in their country so they don't have to waste their time more on a pandemic treatment and condemn it right up front. And turn back to the country and let our people take care of it with knowledge. Not like they just did to harm and kill even 13 million. Admitted now, at least, by the crooks themselves. This has been BTWRLM579. Hope something I said helps you square away the world. Look at it quicker. Undertake an assessment. Make your determinations. Position yourself to be in less jeopardy than what I think these psychopaths want to do. And I'll be with you, tech diffs, for nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum wide. In Hal's court, no place to hide. A cannibal bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.